Here we go. Okay. And you can see it starts recording.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, leave it on pause.
Okay, I'll leave it on pause.
And as we said yesterday, that all the things that we're dealing with here are part of the issues that were addressed in the State of the Nation address, and the ministers would further elaborate on these programs and other matters will be done.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to begin. Good morning, everybody. As you can see, I've had a very bad night. I'd like to start by just outlining what I understand as the key focus areas for 2008. Now, let me also apologize for the absence of Minister Mdladlana. He did indicate to me on Sunday that he's unable to be with us today, but I'm very glad the acting DG is here and DG Morotuba as well, who have been working very closely with my department. I understand the human resource development arena as consisting of five key areas which we have discussed in the cabinet lekhotla and in the past few months. The first relates to the national human resource development strategy, and the directive we have there is to refine, consolidate, and strengthen the strategy. You all know that there has been a strategy in existence for several years, but it is clear that it has not been as coordinated as it should be. It hasn't fully given life to programs that address in a manner that is at maximal efficiency the skills challenges that South Africa confronts, and therefore we are working on this particular task. The second area is one President Mbeki made reference to, and that is a far more vigorous attack to improve the quality of education in South Africa. That involves a number of key areas, some of which I shall refer to in the more detailed press statement that you're going to have before you. The third is to expand the number of persons that are competent and qualified in scarce skills domains. The fourth is through our human resource development activity to ensure that while indeed we inskill, we also promote social cohesion. It's no use providing education and you have no knowledge of yourself, identity, country, history, etc. No use of having quality education and you're unsafe in our schools. So all those aspects that fall within what one would call promotion of greater affinity within the nation form part of the mandate that falls within this particular cluster. The fifth is, as President Mbeki indicated in his State of the Nation address, is to do business unusual in education. And that is to ensure that our various administrative units function maximally and better, to ensure that delivery is actually achieved in a far more efficient way, to, as the ANC has determined at its conference in December, to mobilize communities through development of a national education campaign, which will involve a mass mobilization of the nation behind the agenda of education, and then matters related to monitoring and evaluation and so on. So those are the five key mandates that we have been given. Now, what is the detail of how we seek to execute them? And that is the statement I shall refer to, which I hope some of you have copies of, and eventually all of you we'll get copies of. We're busy photocopying at the moment. It's probably just unfortunate that I'm very good on paragraph P and commas and semicolons and everything, and I want that to be right before we hand out, plus the content to be accurate. Then, the first part of the statement relates to this matter of coordination, consolidation, and strengthening of the National Human Resource Development Strategy. Is it too long? No? No, 10 minutes is too short. That's not what you're going to reply. Don't go ahead of me. Travel with me. Right. What we've done thus far with respect to the National Human Resource Development Coordination is to really work on commissioning a refocus on the strategy. We've done some work looking at what the various strategies are, and we've now commissioned research to really assist us in understanding what are the strategies that are working and where are we falling short, what kind of skills are we beginning to derive, and how do we create institutional mechanisms to ensure that South Africa becomes better at predicting and responding on human resource development. There has been an outstanding matter, which all of you are aware of, which Education and the Department of Labor have been dealing with. And this is the issue of the organizational review of quality assurance and qualifications in South Africa. We've completed our discussions with Labor on the review and the formulation of a framework for the qualifications, assurance and quality control in South Africa. We issued a joint policy statement in 2007. I intend to, this week, publish a draft bill which will be tabled in Parliament later this year. It will be called the National Qualifications Framework Bill, and it will, of course, include amendments to the Higher Education Act as well as to the General and Further Education Act. The Minister of Labour also intends very shortly to gazette for public comment the Skills Development Amendment Bill. Drafting of this bill is very advanced, DG, I'm sure, and we hope that the gazetting will coincide so that the public has both bills before them to understand how they align. The National Qualification Framework in South Africa, following passage of the legislation I referred to, will consist of three distinct but closely interrelated qualifications sub-frameworks, with the South African Qualifications Authority as an apex organization. These are the Higher Education Qualifications Framework, the General and Further Education Qualifications Framework, and we will now have a new framework, which is the Framework on Trades and Occupations Qualifications. This underscores the belief that we all should learn throughout our life and that we need a structured framework to support and assist learners wherever they learn and to ensure that there is a framework that is linked and coherent and coordinated so that when I acquire qualification here, and it's called a further education qualification, it is linked in terms of concept diversity content with one I might acquire under the auspices of a CETA or another form of institution. So we believe the changes that we make through the bill that will be gazetted this week and the Skills Amendment Bill will address the full directives that we got from the review that was concluded several years ago. So I'm pleased we're at the stage where we're about to publish a draft bill. The second area that I would want to briefly report on is the matter of schools. As all of you know, from this year, all the children in our country are following the national curriculum of South Africa. This is the first time in South Africa that every child in school has been on the same curriculum. Never had it before. The learners in grade 12 will sit for a new senior certificate exam. They have a reduced number of subject offerings, but substantial cognitive demand. And I think we have to repeat that the quality of the senior certificate exam will remain a quality exam, and what is necessary is schools and our learners must learn to work harder. because the exams won't become easier. I think this is an important message that we need to communicate out there. For the first time, maths, all maths literacy are now compulsory for all the children in our country, as is life orientation. All senior certificate exams will now be set at a national level, given that we're following a national curriculum. And we will begin to have a much better measure of the effectiveness, both of our curriculum and our schooling system. You're all aware that this year we have mounted a second chance program for students who were the last class for the old matriculation system. The program has had a promising start in several of our provinces. In terms of figures that I have received from colleagues, in provinces, we have over 100,000 students who have registered for the supplementary exam in May and June this year. Of course, the second chance program is one which the provincial departments of education are responsible for. They have to make sure that the young people are provided with extra tuition at venues identified by the provincial departments of education. And we will provide support through that to them through providing appropriate electronic and print material to those study venues and the learners within them. We continue with our attack at increasing the number of young people that succeed in our gateway subjects. We've increased the number of Dinaledi schools to over 500. These schools have all been targeted for extra support, as you know. We're trying to put more science, language, and math teachers in those 500 Dinaledi schools. I'm pleased to indicate that through our recruitment search last year, where we attempted to identify persons qualified in mathematics and interested in assisting us in education to add more teachers in these key subjects to the system, we've been able to recruit and employ 800 additional maths and science teachers. Many of them have now been appointed to the Dinaledi school, several hundred to other schools throughout the country, which may not necessarily be Dinaledi school. So we've recruited 800 maths and science teachers through the recruitment drive that we began last year. We've also ensured that these schools, which are really part of a nationally driven program, that the children there have additional textbooks and the necessary resources provided for learning these important subject domains. I must, through this briefing, thank the private sector, which has been hugely supportive of the Dinaledi Schools initiative, and thank them for the numerous donations and incentives that they have provided both to learners as well as to teachers. Some companies have built a school laboratory. Others have ensured we have the necessary material in empty classrooms, which are designated libraries in some of our schools. Others have provided teacher development opportunities for upgrading some of our maths and science teachers. And so we sincerely, through this briefing, thank the private sector for the role that they've played. Our expectation is that our schools will be able to achieve the target of 50,000 passes in maths at the end of this year. And I hope I won't regret saying that. I know the children won't allow me to. All of you are aware that textbooks have been a perennial problem. And the National Department of Education has decided, with the agreement of our colleagues at the provincial level, to take a far more interventionist stance with respect to the matter of textbooks, to ensure that every learner has at least a minimum package that allows them to study. Building on the success of the recovery plan in 2007, the media-based study buddies program will be continued. And I'm pleased to announce that we've agreed a new partnership with independent newspapers and Liberty Life Foundation, which will see the production of low-cost workbooks for learners in grade 11 and 12, and will be distributing these books with them. This intervention will be supported by the electronic media through Mindset and SABC Learning Channel, as well as through web-based IT support through our own portal and DVD materials. So we're really not relying just on the basic set of textbooks that learners should have. We're going out with material. The material is both study material, but we'll also be publishing in the study buddies tests on a regular basis so that learners can test themselves. And then some of the study buddies will be the actual answers. They can compare what they've done. So that, you know, we help young people to engage with learning in a far more active way than perhaps we've done before. The third area I'd want to talk about in our human resource development is, of course, the FET colleges and our skills development drive there. You would be aware that in 2007, we had 25,425 students enrolled in the new National Certificate Vocational Program. And we set ourselves an enrollment target of 40,000 students for 2008. I'm pleased to report that we have over 52,000 students who have registered this year for the three-year vocational program. It's evidence that the quality of the programs and the outreach to schools has sent very strong signals into the system. We've also provided bursaries for about 20,000 students to assist them to enter this very important field of further education and training. The department has identified 18 FET colleges, two per province, which we will dedicate to training students in ICT skills. We've selected a team of practitioners in this field to identify which are these skills that are most needed in the ICT domain, and to then assist us with the 18 colleges to develop programs that are both differentiated, but which respond to industry's needs in terms of ICT skills. And we hope in that way to really begin expanding the pool of skills in this particular area of need in the economy of South Africa. I think I should also indicate that the first cohort that wrote the National Certificate of Vocational Exams didn't do as well as we anticipated in mathematics, but we are addressing that particular set of failures and working with tutors and young people in a support program to ensure that they do succeed. And it's an ongoing challenge that we must address. Then I come to the matter of higher education. As you all know, and the discussion is very current at the moment, very current, that's not a pun or anything, we need to increase the number of engineering graduates in South Africa. Currently, our institutions of higher learning graduate around 1,500 B engineering and BSc engineering students. Both of these degrees are four-year qualifications. I really want to appeal to people, especially some of my friends out there, to stop saying we must produce 1,000 engineers a year, as though it can be done this year. We should get to a point where our country can produce more than 1,000 engineers. You don't produce an engineer in 1 year. No country does it. You know, people say like Korea, like this, but they didn't do it in 1 year. There's no engineer produced in 1 year. But we must get to a point where we can produce 1,000 or more in a year, in a particular graduate. 1,000 or more, in fact. In response to the need to increase graduate output, I have allocated 48 million rand to four universities, UCT, Wits, KwaZulu-Natal, and the University of Pretoria, based on their graduation and success rates, particularly graduation rates of black students that are at those institutions. They've proven to be the most successful in black students' access and success to engineering. And therefore, we said to them, expand the numbers, we'll provide you with the resources to do so. These finances will be used to enhance student support as well as teaching facilities for the expanded intake into this very important field. During the planning process for 2010, which is the year in which we want to see the enrollment planning and shaping of the system really coming to full fruition, a number of institutions, as we discussed it, what they could take on, how much they could expand, etc., indicated that they could in fact increase their enrollment in key disciplines, science, engineering, technology, if we were able to provide them with additional allocations. So over the next 3 years, I'm pleased to be able to report that we've secured over 3.5 billion rand to provide for infrastructure, teaching, and learning support in key disciplines in our institutions of higher education. And this is all universities and all universities of technology that will share this 3.5 billion. A significant amount was allocated to increase, as I say, enrollment and graduation outputs in engineering. I will be circulating a table that we've prepared so that you see the figures and the allocations, and then you can also help us to hold the university to account for those funds. With respect to the National Skills Development Strategy, which is headed by Minister Mgagana, the second phase of the NSDS will be completing its third year on the 31st of March 2008. As you know, he announced the new strategy in March 2005. The department continues to achieve a good result in the numbers of learners being registered in a variety of learning programs linked to the National Skills List that has been aligned to ACISA, and more specifically to GIPSA. Since April 2005 until the third quarter of this financial year, a total of 194,913 employed learners and a total of 117,729 unemployed learners in SCES and critical skills have been registered on accredited occupation-based learning programs by the seekers. This is against the target of 125,000 learners for both employed and unemployed. So the target has been exceeded quite hugely. This shows that the demand for training continues to far exceed targets that we set only 3 years ago. There's a huge thirst for training opportunities in our country, and we really need to develop ways of responding to this massive growth. A gratifying element of this continued acceleration in learner registration is the increase in numbers of artisans that are being registered by CETAs. Since April 2005, over 13,000 artisans were registered for training. But in the last 9 months, almost 9,000 of these artisans were registered by CETAs, and we have another 9,000 who are in the process of being registered in the first quarter of 2008. The first quarter of each year has traditionally always been a time for larger learner enrollments. And of course, one of the challenges we have is to make sure people stay in the system and exit with a real qualification. The CETAs are also indicating that they will register another 20,000 learners during this new financial year, which will begin in April 2008. The Minister of Labour made an announcement last year that 300 million rand would be set aside for artisan development under the National Skills Fund. The applications for this fund have been utilised and have been finalised rather, and funding for another 7,350 artisans will be channeled to those CETAs that have shown a genuine commitment to artisan development. These are the exact words of Minister Mgagana, genuine commitment to artisan development. He didn't tell me which CETAs these are. Maybe the acting DG will later. The Minister of Labour has requested me to register his disappointment in that not all CETAs responded with the enthusiasm he had expected, nor were they all committed to reprioritize some of their committed funding toward artisanal training. We're exploring the possibility of extending this facility to those companies that can demonstrate their financial commitment to artisanal training so that we could match their contribution from the funds that remain in the fiscus. the total uptake of that 300 million has amounted to just about 185 million, and therefore we have around 115 million available to be taken up in this proposed type of partnerships. The high levels of artisan enrollments by CETAs resulting from the call to reprioritize funds, which was a call given by the Deputy President to the Minister of Labour under the auspices of JIBSA, indicates that by 2010, the 50,000 qualified artisans needed by the country, as indicated by JIBSA last year, is really beginning to look like a very strong reality. The challenge will be to make sure that the quality of artisans that come out of the pipeline is the best quality artisan South Africa can develop. Of course, this cohort will be complemented by the large number of young people that commence on the National Certificate Vocational that I referred to earlier. Also, the thousands who completed the various learnerships will also be assisted to acquire artisanal status so that they can meet trade test requirements. Minister Mdladana concludes by indicating that the review of the CETA system has received considerable comment from a variety of role players and especially the media. He says CETA news always seems to be good for newspaper sales. I don't know how he knows that. Although more recently the Eskom load shedding seems to have taken the limelight. I don't know whether it's relieved or what. We initiated a review long before a plethora of papers from a whole set of researchers telling him what to do with CETAs. This process is also at an advanced stage within NEDLAC, and he will shortly be making an announcement once they've agreed on some of the most fundamental aspects that should be adjusted within the CETA system. Now, social development initiatives that relate to skills development also continue to be addressed through the National Skills Fund in collaboration with the provincial structures of the Department of Labour. Since April 2005, an average of over 9,000 unemployed persons per month have enjoyed skills training in projects across the country, including in the expanded public works project funded by the National Skills Fund. On average, 66% of those that received training were placed in full-time or temporary employment. I'd like to conclude then by introducing to you the draft Bill of Responsibilities that I, my department, and the National Religious Leaders Forum were mandated to work on by the Presidential Working Group on Religion. The Bill of Responsibilities is one that is titled the Bill of Responsibilities for the Youth of South Africa. What it has attempted to do is draw on the Constitution, because we exercise our rights through the Constitution. We have drawn on it to derive a set of what we believe are responsibilities that should attach to our exercise of the rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights. So you would see that the titles we use are the various sections of the clauses in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. And all we have done is seek to elaborate what the enjoyment of those freedoms means in terms of me being a responsible person, both in our society and worldwide. So you can read this at your leisure. You have advanced knowledge of it. I'm very a bit upset GCIS and the President stole my thunder, because this is supposed to be our thing with the religious leaders. Nevertheless, this will be popularized, published, the public will have an opportunity to comment, we'll put it in all schools, all public spaces. We hope, while it is titled for youth, that every South African will believe that indeed as I exercise my rights, it's important that I'm aware of these responsibilities and that I make them a reality in my country. Final matter is the National School Pledge. Now, everybody quarrels with me and my correction of language. The National Schools Pledge is a pledge for all schools. There is no National School Combi. The National Schools Pledge, without an apostrophe before the S, is for all schools, plural. And therefore, this is the National Schools Pledge that we are proposing. We have worked on it with stakeholders, speaking to you, speaking to teachers, but nevertheless, it will be put out for public comment so that all of us feel we've had an opportunity to both look at this, discuss this, and see whether we believe we can live with it. What we'll be asking very simply is that a school, when schools have assembly, let's encourage young people to recite the National School Pledge and let's see whether through it they might internalize those core values that we as South Africans have thought very important. I need to say, the values are not selected by Naledi Pandor. If you look at this, it's drawn very much on the preamble of the Constitution of South Africa, which is the Constitution of our country. If you'll allow me, then I'd just like to read it, and then we'll open for discussion. It's the National Schools Pledge, and we would ask young people to read as follows. We, the youth of South Africa, recognizing the injustices of our past, honor those who suffered and sacrificed for justice and freedom. We will respect and protect the dignity of each person and stand up for justice. We sincerely declare that we shall uphold the rights and values of our Constitution and promise to act in accordance with our duties and with the duties and responsibilities that flow from these rights. Ke e ikara ke. Nkosi sikelela e Afrika. That is what we have done. It's been a long road. The President in his speech spoke about options. We did have options, but really we have reformulated, and we've emerged with this, which we hope to put before the nation for their comments and view. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. We will now take questions from the media. If Yan Yan wants to start, please identify yourself. And as we've done with the other briefings, we'll take one question at a time. Sure.
Thank you, Chair, and in your behalf for the Berger. Minister, wishing you a good year and an even better day. Starting off in, I thought of four questions I'd like to ask. Firstly, on this pledge, which of course is an astounding opportunity for nitpicking, I'm sure.
You said one question.
Only one. Okay. Minister, is there a correct Afrikaans translation for it? Because we'd like to publish it. And secondly, do you think that the pledge might in some way become sort of a nationalist tool? I mean, it must be some sort of thing that you might have thought about if you've got these children standing at assembly and reciting it, basically. What happens to a child who, and some of these children are very small, whose parents might want it not to do so? Then, Toba, can I continue? Secondly, on legislation, Minister, you've referred to FET legislation that's coming through. Any idea what we can expect in any sort of education laws amendment bill, any changes that you want to do, especially to schools legislation? Thirdly, we've had quite an avalanche of rather depressing findings, some of which has angered your DG. On safety in our schools and on international benchmarking. I sometimes think that we tend to forget where we come from. Are we making progress? I mean, the situation seems dire, but is it more or less dire than it was? And perhaps if you could inform us why you would say that. And then finally, Minister, and don't dodge me on this one as you normally do, do you see provinces as a hindrance to our education system? And do you think that our system needs to be rethought, the whole system of concurrent government? Just your thoughts on that.
Okay, yeah, Minister.
Okay, with respect to the pledge, well, there isn't yet a translated version. We'd have to do that, and we have to work on it. And I'll try to ensure that it's correct, although my Afrikaans is not as good as my Setswana. But we will make sure. I know you're saying that because of the question papers, which have not always been of the quality that they should in the Afrikaans, but we're addressing that. Will it become a nationalist too long? I don't quite understand what that means, particularly given that I'm not aware of a single South African that has said I want to opt out of the Constitution. And therefore, I can't imagine that any parent would say, I don't want my child to say these words, which were crafted by the people of South Africa. So there is, for me, no nationalist intention. As you hopefully heard, the pledge speaks very much to values that we want to really internalize and have our young people take up as part of their core purpose in our society. The history that we have had in South Africa relates to the inhumanity that we direct toward each other and sometimes ourselves. And I think we need to change that character of our people and you know, of our country, and set before young South Africans the possibility that they have a real, real chance at creating a very different South Africa. So that really is the intention. I mean, I saw comments which said, you know, this is what's happened under apartheid. I wasn't aware there was a democratic constitution under apartheid with a wonderful preamble like this. I said that's what happened under communism. I wasn't aware that there were communists in government, you know, etc. So I'm not sure what the fears might be. But to me, it seems, and to those of us who've discussed and talked to young people, that these are universal values that you'd want any human being to attach themselves to. One of the questions we've been asking, should we have the hand over the heart thing and so on. But this is, and so, it, you know, we avoided allegiance, etc. And we said, it's a pledge from me, independently done, to my society and the rest of humanity around me and worldwide. As to legislation, we are going to have the NQF legislation, as I indicated. And there are consequential amendments to the Higher Education Act, as well as the GenFEQA Act. We're just making those changes. I haven't yet determined whether there'll be an amendment bill with respect to other school act amendments. But there are some changes that I'm considering. But I don't want to steal the thunder of my budget debate. I have to have something to say there, too. So I won't say any more around that. With respect to the Pearls, the international reading study that was done, where many of our children did very badly, we, of course, are devising and have been working on strategies to improve literacy in South Africa. And as I indicated, I will publish what I'm calling a foundations for learning strategy. And essentially what I'm saying is, can we please make sure we get the foundations right? And foundations exist and have to begin from grade R right through the system. So what we're really hoping we'll do through the detail of that strategy is to say, this is how you lay the foundations at the early phase of schooling. As you go up to intermediate and senior and primary school, you build on the foundations. And as you go into high school, you sustain the foundations. So you never give up on teaching reading and writing and numeracy. It's throughout your learning. But you have to do it, you know, at kind of the front of your effort in the classroom. And this is clearly not happening. So the message is going to go out very loud. We are talking to media houses to help us with a message. We're sending very clear A, B, C, step 1, 2, 3, 4 to schools messages, clear support material developed by teachers from primary school who are very good with reading, very good with writing, so using their expertise and understanding of what should be done to enter into all schools to ensure that we do succeed. Then something unusual, we just talked about before. I want every child from grade 3 to have an assessment record on their reading ability. And one of the changes I'd like to introduce is from next year, at entry to grade 3, every child must be tested on their reading, writing, and numeracy skills, so that we have a record card. And any time any person enters a primary school, they can ask for this learner in grade 3, can I see their reading and writing assessment card? Which tests have they done? So on a regular basis, they'll be testing. We're doing preparing a nationally normed test, which will be used in all primary schools throughout the country. Of course, there are many schools which already are using such tools. So really, we're trying to support the system that's not doing what we regard as necessary. And where schools are doing things right, obviously they will continue with what they are doing. But at least everybody should in their classroom be able to show us a record of their assessment of children's ability in these important areas. We've never had this in our country, and it's a step that I want to move towards. Now, on the matter you referred to of the DG, you see, I can't go and read one part of the stats of a study by Pearls, which was an intensive study almost over 1.5 years. And then I take one statistic and I say all children feel unsafe in schools, because that's what was done. There's not been research by the body that made the statement. So I understood why the DG got very upset. I did calm him, you know, and say, don't react like that. But the thing was, we are concerned that I take a study and I get tables here and I see 23% in answer to a question where there's no probing. What is meant by safe? What do you mean you don't feel safe, etc.? Is it when you see a teacher who might do something to you, or has there been an incident at your school recently, etc.? You take that and then you make a conclusion, which is not even here. So the statistic is reported upon, but it's not elaborated in a way where I could say, I carried out research and this is what I found. That was what caused the disquiet. Finally, on the provincial matter, we have discussed this. As you know, Minister Mufumadi is in the throes of receiving replies to the question he sent out on the provincial system. I do believe that concurrence cannot only be in policy terms. I think there should be some concurrency in the financial arrangements. I think where there are national priorities, the national government should be able to support those priorities through having specific allocations provided to it. I think we tend to define concurrent, the Schedule 4 functions, as national legislation responsibility and financial responsibility entirely to provinces, and therefore you don't have any lever at the national level to hold provinces to account on agreed programs. And so I do think there's a need for rethought of the arrangement, but devolution of powers, I believe, is very important. So I wouldn't support just a centralized system, but I believe the structure mechanism must allow for national to be able to do something. At the moment, if 100 no-fee schools don't get money, I don't have any power to intervene or withdraw funds, or, you know, and I think there should be such an arrangement. That's how I understand concurrence. But I found the system in place, so I've had to, you know, exist according to it. So that would be the kind of reformulation and rethinking I would call for.
Okay, let's take the next one from Carol.
Carol Payton from the Financial Mail. Minister, obviously there is a drive to produce skills, particularly intermediate technical skills. But I'm wondering whether we're not getting obsessed with the numbers rather than the product. I'd like to know, on the CETA numbers that you talked about, have you done a tracking study? I know there were tracking studies done earlier which looked at placement rates and graduation rates. Whether you've done that for the last 2 years, so that those numbers that you mentioned now, whether you could just put those in perspective of those people who actually graduated and were then employed. Also, same thing relates to the FET colleges, where you've increased the enrollment dramatically. But in fact, last year, actually the outcome was a disaster. So you weren't able to provide the support last year or to screen students, and yet you're increasing the enrollment. So I'd just like to know what your thinking is there. And then on the pledge, it was spoken of as something that school children will recite every day, but you said now in assembly if they want to. What is your thinking about that? And you didn't reply to Yanyan's question of what if people don't want to. I think you did. You said no one's against the constitution. Thanks.
I'd be surprised if I really would be surprised if people don't want to. And I must say, before working on such things, one does talk to parents, stakeholders, and I have been surprised at the support. And I hope it will continue. We'll see as we publish it. Of course, people are going to find faults, etc., and will say, I'm sure, that Nkosi Sikelewe should be in Polish or something. So there'll be all of that. But I think these are, universal values which I believe everybody can attach to. And the view would be that when there is assembly, some schools have assembly every day, others three times a week, but at assembly and even in class, when we gather, let's encourage our children to learn this, to recite it, to really internalize it as part of what will guide them as they live their life in South Africa and throughout the world. So that would be the hope. But one has to wait for the public comment process to see whether there be radical shifts or whether indeed there's such objection that government must think again. So we'll wait for that process. Aren't we obsessed with numbers rather than quality? No. Quality is my mantra. It's what I really believe we have to achieve. The question is, how do you get there? And I think the lesson for me has been always that anything that you do, don't just believe that the objectives you want to achieve will emerge automatically. Follow it through assiduously. And I keep insisting on this with my department. And each time the lessons emerge that indeed we should monitor, track, evaluate all the time. Now, one of the things that's happening is, of course, once you assert quality, if the cohort you're dealing with hasn't got the skills, it's very difficult. So the options could be you drop quality and say, all right, let's make it easier so that we meet the ability of the pool of learners or students. Or you say, let's maintain the quality but increase academic support. So we've gone for the support because it's clear that there hasn't been adequate support at the college level. This was recognized over a year ago, which is why we provided more funding through the RECAP funds to colleges to build up better student support mechanisms. I may say that we should remember where the FET colleges come from, what their history is. They've never had to teach high-order skills. Now we're demanding this, and therefore the training of those lecturers in the colleges, the support to the learners who go into them, and this important need to ensure that these fundamental subjects are part of what they learn. Because before, you came in, you learned the hand skills, you got lots of the vocation, lots of the practical, but you emerged, you couldn't quite write your invoices, you weren't quite numerous, and so on. So those high-order skills are what is posing the challenge, and clearly we'll address them. I think falling is possible, but when you get up, you better be stronger, and that's what we're trying to make sure we are. Then the Department on Labour on whether it's tracking post the training.
Yes, thank you, Minister. We are tracing the placement of learnerships, and we have, following the conclusion of the first 5 years of the National Skills Development Strategy, seen that 70% of those that have been in learnerships have been placed. Those that have taken apprenticeships and have qualified as artisans, they almost immediately get a job because of the need for artisans across the economic sectors. We are also now doing a midterm study of placement of learnerships again, and we hope that by June we will have the results out of that one. Thank you.
Let's take the next one from Piet.
Manager, I have a suggestion about the Afrikaans...
Please introduce yourself.
My name is Piet Kruger from Bill's newspaper. Manager, I have a suggestion about the Afrikaans translation. I'd like to ask my readers to send in their suggested translations and maybe work with your department so that we select an official Afrikaans translation. How does that sound to you?
Well, as I said, we will publish for public comment, and we'll see what emerges. Now, we, of course, would welcome Beals, but I'm just remembering that in late December, after I had announced the senior certificate results and indicated that we were looking at how the media would play a role in the results release, several of the Beals writers wrote in and said things like, Pandor wants to keep results out of the newspapers because her Africans are failing and she wants to stop Afrikaners who do very well from being admired. There was a whole column of such comments, and I hope that when you ask your readers to assist with the translation, that it won't be that kind of comment that we receive back.
Well, I guess it will be an open debate, and but let's hope that it will lead to something constructive.
Okay, thank you. Next one, Amy.
I'm going to say Amy Musgrave is going to say, firstly, at the ANC's December conference, they want the no-fee schools to be pushed to 60%, because I understand they're currently on 40%. I just want to know where the department stands on that and what practical measures will need to be taken. And then... also, Jesus, I know the discussions are, and in fact, the ANC has suggested that they be reduced from 23 to 5. I just want to know what considerations are going around that. And is there, I know you said the process is nearly completed, is there a possible date? Can you give us an idea when that NEDLAC process will be done?
Okay, who's that? DT?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. The CETA review, NEDLAC had commissioned a review of the CETAs. They will very shortly engage with that report that has been produced. A NEDLAC task team consisting of all the social partners has been set up, and that process will commence possibly already by Thursday this week. We will outline the process to be followed with the NEDLAC. But the review has been done and the report has been produced for that purpose. The Skills Development Amendment Bill, we are hoping that the Skills Development Amendment Bill and the National Qualifications Framework Bill will be considered together at NEDLAC because of the interrelationship of the two. We are finalizing some outstanding aspects with regards to Skills Development Bill. And as you know, the process is that it must go to Cabinet for approval, and then we will engage with it in the NEDLAC process. And we hope that we can get both of these bills through Parliament this year, given the congested programs already for this year. Thank you.
Okay.
No, we must get the bills through Parliament. It's not a hope we have to this year. The no-fee schools, we are ready to implement 60% if the provinces make the finances available for that. The equitable share in education has been increased, as was indicated in the MTF statement last year, and we hope those resources will be directed to education departments by provincial treasuries. As you know, at times when we allocate through the equitable share with an assumption that resources will go to education, they don't always land there. But the message from Polokwane was very clear, and I'm sure all the provinces heard it. We are ready, system ready, to implement at 60%, which would mean schools in quintiles 1, 2, and 3 are addressed in terms of no-fee schools and what it would assist us to do is avoid the current situation I find in my constituency in the R. I visit a school and the primary school is a no-fee school. Next to it, there are two schools which are both fee because they are in another area because they're just two streets down and so on. So if we get to 60%, then I think it would really have targeted poverty quite significantly. And of course, linked to it, we must make sure the system is more efficient in terms of schools receiving the necessary resources.
Okay, next one.
Hi, I'm just from another independent newspaper. I was wondering as whether can this pledge also be translated into a digital? I'm kidding, I'm joking, Minister. No, no, just a follow-up to Amy's question on no-fee schools. To say, so far, what's your assessment in terms of support to those schools? Because it's good to say no-fee for those schools, but sometimes it really, it's a bureaucratic nightmare to have schools, especially rural poor schools, to replace the window and, you know, wait for some district officials letter to do that. And secondly, Minister, when you came to education in 2004, you said one of your priorities will be to make sure that you cap or arrest the high fees in universities or technicals. But it seems like every year, you know, since then, 4 years later, you get strikes or universities banning, and part of the grievances is the what they call financial exclusion. What's happening there?
Right. As I say, I think with the no-fee schools, the system must be improved. I do think some of the implementation in some provinces has not been as we had anticipated. One of the things that has really worried me is that I had said to all the MECs, ensure that those schools which used to be fee-charging, even though they got very low income, because the parents were obviously poor, make sure they have a cash flow. So they can buy chalk, buy a duster, etc. And even buy, you know, exercise books if the stationery is not delivered. Sadly, that directive has not been followed by all the provinces, and therefore many schools have found themselves in difficulties because the little cash flow they had through school fees is no longer coming through. So we are going to revise the system and I think make it clearer in law that schools should be given the freedom to be able to run their schools properly. I think this thing of a paper budget or whatever it is really making life quite difficult for our schools. So we've got to find a better way of implementing what I thought was, what I still think is a very important policy change in South Africa. So it's a matter we're looking at and are addressing. Also, as I said, my department must be able to, if necessary, retrieve money from provinces and direct it from the national department to schools that haven't received their funding if the financial arrangements are properly structured to allow for that. We can't have schools held hostage to the inefficiency of educational administrators. I just think it's very, very important that some of these changes are considered. Of course, I know I'll get the reply of what about the Constitution, what about this, but for me, the issue you must address is our children must be able to learn in decent conditions. Schools must have the resources that allow them to create those decent conditions. The fee levels of university, well, one of the things I discovered very quickly in 2004 was that the subsidy levels had been declining, and therefore universities really had been forced into a position where they had to rely on tuition fee income. With the changes I've indicated today and those still to be announced, we will see improved resources in the a block subsidy grant to higher education, and I think such an improvement should then place universities in a situation where any fee increases should be kept at reasonable levels. I say that because curbing which is what I said we'd consider. I didn't say we would do it. I have looked at my past statements. Curving would make it very difficult because you can't predict what laboratory equipment, etc., would be needed, and therefore the first prize has been address the block grant, and we've begun to do that. The second was ensure that you're providing resources for capital investment, because that was another huge cost for universities. Those two things are beginning to happen. The MTEF indicates significant an amount in 2009 to higher education. Hopefully it will address the block grant, and we'll begin to see some redress and reasonableness in terms of a fee level. Now, one of the things I think we should examine, well, firstly, we must be categorical and say there's no way that any violence and vandalism on campuses should be tolerated. It's a criminal activity and must be dealt with as such. I've made this very clear to vice chancellors, and I'm sure students' organizations have heard me on that. Second, we must ensure that we don't become professional students. A lot of students are incurring huge debt because they stay at university for many, 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 many years and get loans and loans and loans. The NSFAS was supposed to be linked to potential and to success, and we've lost some of that. Therefore, I think we've got to address this particular character. Finally, I think NSFAS has to be expanded. We've got to improve the support that we give to very financially needy students. I also think we've got to find partners in the private sector. There are many young people whose parents can't afford the current conditionalities imposed by the banking sector. But if there were some form of partnership between government and the private sector, maybe a model could be developed to support those students whose parents are currently excluded by their income level from the NSFAS grant, but they kind of fall in between. They're not quite that well off in terms of earnings, nor that poor that they'd be NSFAS recipients. It's sort of in the middle, and we have to find a way with the private sector of addressing that.
Just to follow up to my question, on the high level of fees in higher education institutions, are you also concerned about the salary bill of these institutions, especially those salaries of vice chancellors as well?
Well, the vice chancellors put together a task team led by Mampela Rampela in 2006, which looked at what criteria can or should be developed to determine what a vice chancellor should earn in a particular institution, because the institutions are so different. Her report indicated a range of things. The report has not been made public, which is very interesting for me, but it is clear that there need to be criteria that should inform salary levels in our institutions. Criteria such as size of the institution. You can't have the vice chancellor of UCT, which has thousands of students, several very complex faculties, earning the same as a vice-chancellor of an institution with 7,000 students, one faculty or two, and so on. So you need to have some criteria that are rational and make sense. And Mampela Rampela's study was beginning to speak to that. The studies with HESA, I said to them, please, from this, extract the criteria and come back to me with your proposals. So that's something that's being worked on. But let me conclude by saying I am very concerned at the low level of remuneration of academics. We're losing good intellectuals because the remuneration levels of academics are just too low. So this is something that I believe with the new funding that will come on stream from the next financial year, that there must be a strong attack on improving the academic salaries in South Africa.
Next one.
Hi, Lukhan Nkala for ETV. Ma'am, I was wondering, have you ever thought about a date when you would like to implement the pledge, you know, when it will be kind of rolled out to schools? Thank you.
What we will do is allow an opportunity for the public to comment, and the usual practice is around 30 days. So I would think by the middle of March, around Human Rights Day, we might want to make this the kind of date we are aiming toward. It would depend, though, very much on the comment process, because I have no idea what will emerge, as I said. Might be fundamentally altered, it may cause a rethinking and so on. So I think let's let the comment process occur, and then let's see where we go from there.
Okay, next question. Karima.
Hi, Minister. Karima Brown, Business Day. Just two questions. If you could just elaborate on the possibility of reopening teacher training colleges as a means of providing support to teachers and to also fast-track, you know, greater numbers of quality teachers into schools, whether there are plans to do that. And then secondly, your concern about provinces not getting on board in terms of the resources. In the housing ministry, there has been an agreement at MINMAC level that those provinces who can't roll out, they will have their monies taken from them and it will be given to provinces that can do it. Would you be considering something along those lines to meet the objectives that you've set for yourself?
Yes, I'd be interested to see what law allows housing to do that, because currently the frameworks are actually very different.
So they've agreed at MINMAC level?
Yes, I want to see the provincial government agreeing to that, but anyway, let me not go there. I do know the debate, so it could be interesting. Let's see. On teacher training colleges, I don't think we can go back there, but I do think we need to expand the facilities available in higher education, in terms of education faculties, to produce more teachers. But first prize for the moment is to attract more young people to the field. And the bursaries have begun to do that. We've just deployed over 800 of the first group that has qualified with have support of the Funza Lushaka bursaries, Teach the Nation. And they've been deployed. They're all scarce skills, languages, maths and science. They're out in our schools. And this is a very exciting development. But I think, you know, if you want to go back to the teacher training colleges, where do you get the staff? Which ones do you open? A lot of them have been moribund, the campuses. How do you reopen them with what staff? Because any time you think of creating an institution, you must think about the human resources that will work within that institution. And I think we moved away, as many systems in the world have done, from teacher training colleges, because you wanted graduate teachers in your system. That's what gives you the kind of quality teacher that you want. So, you know, Polokwane will kill me, but anyway, they elected me to anything. I don't think you can, in fact, recreate the teacher training colleges, but you can expand higher education take-up. Of increased pools of students. I am not averse to education development institutes, for example, where our teacher development programs could be run and so on, but I really don't think in this age South Africa should go back to teacher training colleges.
Next one, Kaifas. Minister Kaifas, City Press.
On the universities and the fees, has there been a mechanism to track whether the lowering, the increase in subsidies actually directly results in a lowering of fees by universities, or are they using this money for something else? And then on the new curriculum, now that all the learners are going to do maths literacy and maths, what about the provision of teachers? Are there enough teachers? Are there enough maths teachers going into schools? I see you say here that 800 additional teachers for Nyalele schools. But what about the rest of the country? Are there enough schools to provide this right now? And as far as the Nyalele schools are concerned, the how are they doing? Has there been a review of how they're doing in, you know, increasing pass rates, especially in maths? Because I see we haven't broken the 50,000 barrier in terms of passes. Thanks.
The Dinaledi School 50,000 target was set for 2008. We always made it very clear. So let's see how we do at the end of this year. On the higher education, well, the improvement in the subsidy really is only going to begin from next year. And as I say, what we would expect would be consideration of really looking at the fee levels by the institutions. All the vice-chancellors are concerned about the poverty that confronts many of the students. So they don't just cruelly decide to increase fees. It's been linked to how much income they're getting. So it is part of the discussion I'm having with HESA around the improvement to the block grant. And let's see how we do with respect to that. But it's important for us to say that there is no university in the world that is able to meet its full cost from state subsidy. All universities have to have some free income. And it's only in the wealthiest countries in the world that you have the levels of free higher education that some people are calling for in South Africa. Countries of our level of economic development really would never be able to afford a free higher education system. So there has to be some private contribution. This is a very unpopular political statement, but these truths need to be said.
Okay, we're going to take the
math teachers. Well, what I would like to see in South Africa is that every high school should offer quality mathematics program to the learners. But this is not the case at the moment. Some of our teachers are not qualified. Some of our schools don't offer maths at all. We have agreed in MinMec that our intention is to ensure by 2009 that every high school has qualified teachers of maths. All 6,000 are offering quality mathematics teaching. So we are working on that. But as I've indicated, my hands are tied by provinces. I have all the wonderful ideas. One knows what should be done because it's very basic. It's been done in other systems. But if the provinces don't act, you know, there's not much one can do. And if the offense is not so serious that you have to use Section 139, you really are not armed to intervene. But we must improve the quality. On the math literacy, we continue to work with those teachers that are teaching math literacy. We're training them. As I indicated, the study buddies would focus on those key fundamental subjects, language, life orientation, your math literacy, mathematics, geography, and so on. So, you know, we are exerting as many of the devices that we can to improve the quality. But in the final analysis, we rely on our provinces to act as we've agreed, and we rely on our educators to respond to the non-negotiables that Mr. Zuma articulated in the January 8th statement on the 12th of January. The non-negotiables: in class, on time, teaching, no harassment of learners, no behavior that actually brings the status into disrepute.
Okay, we're going to take the last two, that is Carol.
So I just want to follow up, Minister, on the maths question. Implementing maths literacy is compulsory from this year. How are you feeling? I mean, are you sleeping okay about that at night? Because, I mean, at the FET colleges, the implementation of maths literacy was a disaster. I mean, we had some 20-something pass rate. So are you concerned that that this is going to drag down the overall matric pass rate? And I'm not saying, you know, all for quality as well, but what are you going to do to make sure that doesn't happen? What support are you going to put in to make sure that those kids are actually able to write the exam? Thanks.
I can speak to continuing the support, being alert to the fact that there were challenges in the FET colleges. There are challenges in schools. In my meetings with school principals at the beginning of the year, some of them gave me long lectures about math literacy and how the students feel about it and whether they're really, you know, receiving it well. The language demand, some of them the numeracy demand was seen as quite heavy, because to interpret statistics for sociology purposes is not, you know, as easy as one assumes. So this is why, with the study buddies, what we said is we are going to have math literacy material as core content. And each quarter, there'll be a test. So really, I think the success of the system doesn't depend on the minister. It's what happens out there. You know, and I think we spend too much time really focused here instead of what's actually going on there. Why is it that our teachers can't teach these things? Why is it that the support is not happening? You know, why should we actually say study buddies out of resource? We know there are inadequacies, so we're trying to respond. We have programs for the training of teachers of math literacy. There's special programs in the holidays, on weekends. So we're doing all possible to support the system. And to say to the system, this is what you actually have, and you've got to make sure it works, because we think it's good for our learners. We think we must make it work. You know, I think the outcome of the matric pass rate depends on what happens. And my view is, if schools get down to learning, if schools teach the skills that are necessary, if schools have realized that you're going to have to write long essays, you're going to answer hard question papers, therefore practice these skills throughout the year, start preparing for that from grade 8 right through, I'm sure we could see improvement. But whether it will be my time or the next minister, I don't know. But what I will sleep happy about next year after the election, when the next minister is appointed, is I'd have laid the foundations for quality to be achieved.
Take the last.
Minister Paul Vecchiato from ITWeb. Just two questions quickly. The first is, what have you been done to incentivize especially teachers with ICT skills to stay in school? There have always been sort of great targets for being touched by either public and private sector. And then secondly, what about teaching of IT skills down at the primary level, where such skills are probably almost as important as basic literacy and mathematics?
We've just published a proposal with respect to incentives for teachers, but it addresses the scarce skills you've referred to, but also attracting scarce skills teachers to areas that teachers often don't want to go to, that's rural areas as well as schools in townships. I saw an article yesterday where apparently some teachers say it's not good enough, DG, they'd want more, but I don't know which teachers those were. But we've begun on the incentives, the first time we've had it. With respect to primary schools, we've really been encouraging our colleagues in the provinces to ensure that we provide every primary school with a resource center, that we give life to the white paper on e-learning. We're currently busy with a study on how we can, in fact, in a much faster pace, implement the e-learning strategy and ensure that all our schools have access to appropriate technology. So we've got practitioners in the field working on this strategy, which we will put before Cabinet and Treasury before the end of this year in order to assist us in accelerating provision. What I try to do, if I go to a school and I'm able to persuade a funder, if there's no media resource center, I try and ensure that school gets one, primary as well as a secondary school. We also have benefited, I think, quite significantly from IBM providing us with a KidSmart kind of box where children from a very early stage at school have access to information technology and therefore acquire the skills and the kind of computer knowledge at a very early age through play. So a range of things are being done, but I do think we need to do much more. We also want to technologize teachers through providing them with, am I able to say, or should I leave it for the debate? we try to provide each teacher with a laptop or access to one so that they become part of the age of technology. So these are, you know, some of the things we're trying to do to really infuse information technology into the system. Thank you very much. Yes. I think we have to close now.
All right, thanks. The next session will start at 11 o'clock, and that's the economic cluster.
No, man. Oh,